Why, thank you, Neophile. All right, boys and girls, listen up. This is a story told in my family by the men in the family to the boys becoming men in my family. Penfio, you listening?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
This story has been told in my family for nearly 700 years. I'm not kidding. If I'm kidding, my name is not Philostrato Dasti, which, as you know, it most certainly is. Stop making those faces and noises. This is a timeless lesson. And it's not just for the men anymore, ladies. Times have changed since late Middle Ages. You probably noticed. If I ever have children, and any of them are daughters, I'll tell them this story too. And if I'm taken savagely in the pandemic, well, I will have told the story to you, my dear ladies. Oh, and also you two guys. Okay, come on. Up we go. Come on, spring is in the air. Let's walk. Chop, chop. Okay. My great, 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 to the nth degree grandfather, Rinaldo Dasti, was a merchant. One wintry day, midway in his life's journey, he was journeying home from doing some profitable business in Bologna. He was accompanied by his servant, Pippo, a plump, timid, lazy young fellow who was always hungry. Pippo rode a little behind Rinaldo, as was his habitual timidity. The air grew ever colder as they rode. They circled past the Castel Guglielmo, one of the possessions of the Marquis Azza, the ruler of the region, then continued on a desolate stretch of road into lower country towards a small river. Just before crossing the river, there was a grove of leafless trees. Pippo didn't like the prospect of freezing river water. As well, the sun was low and the cold was really beginning to bite.
"Master," he called up to Rinaldo, "what if we turn around and go back to the castel and seek lodging there for the night? It's getting late and I could eat."
Before Rinaldo could reply to his servant, three riders rushed out from the grove of trees and surrounded him. Their leader, a man with impressive black mustaches, addressed himself to my ancestor.
"Do you pray in the morning before you set out on the road, my friend?" he asked, smiling and thus showing off brilliant white teeth.
Rinaldo struggled to stay calm.
I pray to St. Julian, he replied, the patron saint of travelers, and of my family, especially as we are frequent travelers, for a safe road and good lodging for the night.
"I'm afraid good Julian was deaf to your prayers this morning, my friend," said the man with the mustaches, still smiling.
Then he seized the bridle of Rinaldo's horse and yanked it forward. Rinaldo almost lost his seat, but stayed up as he was immediately crowded by the other two men and their horses. All four riders galloped in a bunch into the grove. Pippo, seeing his master attacked thus, didn't rush to his aid, but instead gave out with a high-pitched squeak, then turned his horse around and galloped back up the road to the castel. He gained admission at the gate, had his horse stabled, found a room for the night, and immediately ordered supper, easily putting everything else out of his mind. The three men took all of Rinaldo's belongings, his money, his horse, and most of his clothes, leaving him in only his shirt. They beat him and left him lying in the grove, then galloped off into what had become a very cold night.
"St. Julian is also the patron saint of hunters, my friend,"
the man with the mustaches shouted back, laughing as he rode away. Rinaldo lay stunned and shivering for a time, then forced himself to get up, knowing that if he didn't find shelter, he'd die of the cold. As he limped out of the grove and back to the road, it began to snow. He went as fast as he could back up the road, shivering and aching, his teeth chattering. By the time he reached the castel, it was full dark, and the gates had been closed and locked for the night. No amount of his shouting and banging as the snow whirled around him produced any response. The fat snowflakes soaked his shirt and began to stiffen to ice. His bare feet were bloody and bruised. He hurriedly circled the castel, looking for a place to shelter. At last, he spied a house that was within the castel, but that jutted out from the top of the high wall. He staggered to the place, where the jutting part of the house made an overhang, and beneath the overhang, he discovered a heavy door. He was, by this point, shivering violently, and he thought his teeth would chatter out of his head.
He began banging on the door and shouting, "Please, please let me in! I'm freezing to death! I was set upon by thieves! Let me in, please! Please let me in!"
Okay, looks like we're going a little uphill here. Anyone else feeling a little tired? A little short of breath? Feeling it in the calves a little bit?
A little, yeah.
All right. Anyone need a hand? Yeah. Thea Meta?
No.
Okay, fine. Onward and upward.
In the room, on the other side of the door, a beautiful lady was preparing to take a bath. She was a widow named Emelina, and she lived in the high jutting house with her maid, Columbina. Since her husband's death, and as she was a remarkably beautiful and accomplished woman, Emelina had been the mistress of the aforementioned Marquis Azza. This situation suited her very well, as she not only resided in great comfort, but was also provided with a fairly frequent and ardent lover. She was a lively and sensual woman who often found herself brimming with desire. Oh, be quiet, Panfio. She wouldn't have looked twice at you. She was classy. Emelina and the Marquis had dallied together for quite some time, and they knew how to please each other. They'd planned to spend that evening together, to bathe, to sup, to take to Emelina's bed. But the Marquis, late that afternoon, had been called away on some urgent business of his small state. On his way, he sent Emelina a message, expressing his warmest regards and regrets. "Well," said Emelina to her maid, tossing the message into the fire, "I won't waste the bath or the supper." She rose, went to the bathing room, dropped her robe, and slipped into the bath. "Oh, dear God, that feels good," she said. It was at that very moment that Ronaldo began banging and shouting his pleas on the other side of the door. "Columbina?" said Emelina.
"Yes, Signora," said Columbina.
"Do you hear that?" said Emelina.
"Yes, Signora," said Columbina. "There's someone banging on the door."
"Well, obviously," said Emelina. "But is there not also a man shouting?"
Columbina set down the bucket of hot water she'd been about to add to the bath, went to the door, and pressed her ear to it.
"Yes, Signora," she said. "He says he was set upon by thieves. He's freezing to death, and he's pleading to be let in." "Well, I don't suppose that, as Christian women, we can leave him out there to freeze to death," said Emelina. "You've got the key. Help me out of the bath and into my robe first, then let's let him in."
Columbina did as she was bid, then unlocked the door, unbolted it, heaved the heavy thing open, and bundled Ronaldo inside. She slammed the door shut, bolted and locked it again, as Emelina pulled off Ronaldo's frozen stiff shirt.
"Thank you, ladies," Ronaldo chattered. "Thank you, ladies, thank you, thank you, thank you."
The ladies could see standing before them a well-formed man with some attributes in the prime of his life, though he was now shivering and pale and covered with bruises.
"The bath is still warm," said Emelina. "Let's not waste it."
They helped Ronaldo into the bath. He gasped and sank down into it and let out a huge sigh of relief. He felt pins and needles across his skin, but he'd never felt anything better in his life. And he'd never been more grateful for anything he'd ever felt.
"Saint Julian," he murmured.
Then aloud, he said,
"You've saved me, dear ladies. Bless you, dear ladies. You've saved me."
"Pour in the bucket, Columbina," said Emelina. "Then meet me at the stairs." And with a last look at Ronaldo in the bath, she left the room.
The maid did as she was bid, then went out to her mistress.
"Help him to bathe, then salve his bruises," said Emelina. "I'll find some of my husband's old clothes for him to wear. He seems to be about the same size. Then ask him to join me upstairs by the fire."
"Yes, Signora,"
said Columbina, beginning to grin.
"Yes, Columbina, I'm having a notion," said Emelina. "We've rescued a fine-looking stranger from the cold on a night when the Marquis has left us. Madama Fortuna has made our stranger her toy for the day. He'll have the Marquis's bath, he'll have the Marquis's supper, and who knows what else of the Marquis's he'll have."
"Oh, Signora," said Columbina, grinning widely now, "you know, I've often told you, you deserve everything you get."
"I don't deserve you, Columbina," said Emelina. "But you know how I looked forward to this night. You know how I needed it,"
She made a pouty face. My desire is about to brim over.
Oh boy, we are really going uphill now. Good for you, Meta? Sure you don't need a hand?
Yeah, keep your hands away.
Okay, just checking.
Okay.
Hey, look over there. Look at those trees over there in the woods. Doesn't it seem like, after a harsh winter, a certain number of those trees have just decided to lie down and now they can't get up? Heartbreaking.
About an hour later, Ronaldo, feeling like a new man, dressed in Emelina's husband's fine clothes, which fit him almost as if they were made for him, met his hostess in the room with the fire. There was a low table set before the fire, spread with a sumptuous meal. Emelina sat on thick cushions by the table. She was strikingly beautiful in the flickering firelight and candlelight. Ronaldo stood still for a moment, lost in admiration. Emelina recalled what she had seen in the bath and was strangely moved by how well her husband's clothes fit him. Thus began an enjoyable evening between them. Columbina served when she was needed and watched from behind the arras otherwise. They ate rich food and drank fine wines, both Italian and French. They felt familiar and at ease with each other almost at once and told each other their stories with unusual frankness. They drew closer as the evening went on. The conversation deepened and the wine was drunk. There arrived the inevitable moment when they fell into each other's arms and exchanged embraces and kisses with increasing ardor for quite some time. Then they rose from the cushions before the fire and repaired to Emelina's bedchamber, where they took to her bed and gave themselves to each other fully for several hours and in many ways, until Emelina's desire had receded from the brim and Ronaldo knew himself to be as happily exhausted as he had ever been in his life. "Great goddess," he whispered, smiling and shaking his head. They rose at dawn, as they had agreed, washed and breakfasted, and said their prayers together. Emelina gave Ronaldo some clothes more worn than the finery he'd been dressed in the night before, and a purse full of coins to help see him home. At the door in the bathing room, they exchanged a long, bittersweet farewell kiss. As Ronaldo stepped through the door, he felt a pinch on his right buttock. He turned back and saw Columbina give him a wink. Then the heavy door thudded shut. Ronaldo passed easily through the now open gate and went directly to the central courtyard where he'd hoped to buy a horse. It so happened that the three thieves had passed through the castle gates just moments before Ronaldo and were also in the courtyard trying to sell his horse and belongings. At that moment, Pippo emerged from his lodging, having just devoured a second breakfast, and spotted the thieves. Full of breakfast courage, he started shouting, "Hey, you three! Those three! Hey, they're thieves! That's my master's horse! Those are my master's things! You three! Seize them! They're thieves!" Several of the Marquis soldiers, who'd been loitering around the courtyard, converged on the scene and detained the thieves. Ronaldo, having witnessed the scene with some surprise, stepped up and identified himself to the soldiers, described the contents of the saddlebags, and kissed his horse's nose. The result was that, half an hour later, Ronaldo and Pippo rode out of the gate of the Castel Guglielmo and set off at a brisk canter towards home. Ronaldo had forgiven Pippo, since he'd drawn attention to the thieves, after cuffing him lightly several times about the face and neck, of course. As they rode, Ronaldo offered thanks and renewed his prayer to St. Julian, and gave a grin and nod to Madama Fortuna. Meanwhile, back in the courtyard, the heels of the three thieves dangled in the cold wind and the snowflakes danced around their ankles. By the way, I said in my head the prayer to St. Julian when we left the house today, so hopefully we both get a little lucky. Oh my god, speaking of getting lucky, you guys, do you see that spot right there, underneath that huge tree? I had sex right there one summer with my high school girlfriend. We were on a nature walk. I'm not kidding! Oh, you don't think I can pull that off, Philomena? Okay, fine. You go. You tell your story. You're next.